Well, Frank, we've been talking during our week here in Canada about relations between China and the U.S. And you, as a journalist for the Asia Times in Hong Kong, interested in your perspective on that relationship from that side of the world. So we've got a big meeting coming up between the two presidents next week. There's hopes that there'll be some resolution. Give me your thoughts on how this has progressed.
Well, from my perspective, from my humble view, I think that the two won't reach any concrete deal. Or I think that both sides may have been pretty busy these days preparing their own documents, or these things that China is willing to compromise, or how much China is willing to give in. And China has been eager to, poking around to figure out how much that Trump is willing to take. But I think that there have been rumors that China's list of things that it is willing to do won't make Trump happy. And Trump has already signaled its resolve, its determination to press ahead with more tariffs to actually slap the tariffs on all goods from China. I don't think China has any leverage in this fight, or we say trade war, because China imports far less goods from the U.S. So it's like a kind of dilemma for China, because on one hand, if there is a total fallout, then the Chinese economy will suffer quite a lot. U.S. is China's number one export market, so when your largest buyer is ditching you, then you won't have any you won't find any other alternative to shore up your business. But on the other hand, I think that China is not ready to meet all the demands from the U.S. China is not going to honor its many promises. These promises have been several decades old since it joined the WTO in 2001. China will not honor its promises to protect IP, to grant fair access to the Chinese market, to ensure a level playing field, because the Chinese state-owned enterprises are, literally the babies of the Communist Party. They won't cheat those Chinese private companies fairly, let alone foreign companies. So China's never ready to ensure that it's a wholly market-driven economy, because Beijing wants to maintain its firm grip over its economy. So these are the two conflicting demands that Beijing will never, ever able to strike a right balance. So I think the coming talk between Xi and Trump can just some quite grandstanding assurances, verbal assurances. They both may pay lip service to the friendship, so-called friendship between the two countries. There will be a lot of greetings, pleasantries. But other than this, I don't think it won't be a game-changing event. No, never.
We've heard that the Chinese economy has been affected quite a bit by this, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Chinese economy is obviously feeling the pain, but it's still not taking a beating, not yet, because China itself, it has its huge, massive internal market. That's why there are so many U.S. companies. They are trying desperately to enter the Chinese market because they can't they can't afford to lose the Chinese market. So China can be relatively well off on its own. But let's not forget the issue of overcapacity. Lot of manufacturers of daily necessities, daily consumer goods, they depend heavily on two markets, the US and the EU. But the US still, you know, overweighs the EU in terms of import of the Chinese goods. So when the trade war rages on, those export-oriented enterprises will suffer the first. And then probably, you know, those manufacturers, they cluster typically in those, you know, better off coastal provinces, all the way from Beijing to Guangdong to Shanghai to Guangdong, those coastal provinces in the east and southeast. And these provinces, they are the single largest source of Beijing's physical revenue. And if these, you know, they are literally the powerhouse of the Chinese economy. Let's forget about central China or even the western China. They are literally backward. Nothing is there. Not so many wealth people, not so many commercial activities there. Let's just focus on just 4 to 5 coastal provinces. They are the real drivers of the Chinese economy, and they are suffering now. Well, we are yet to see any big impact statistically, but sooner or later we will. So these provinces, if they suffer, if their economy tumbles, then Beijing may not collect enough money from these provinces, which may in turn affect the livelihood of those poorer Chinese living in central China or western China, which will in turn affect Beijing's military expansion plans, even its plan to build, you know, even more aircraft carriers. You know, Beijing literally has too many things to burn its money for, this a whole lot of things. So I think that once those battle of provinces, they feel the impact, I think Beijing has to do something, either to, you know, try to make peace with the US, or try to find other alternative market to dump its whole stockpile of goods that the US has been boycotting.
So you think, even if there is an agreement, and if the Chinese were to say, okay, we'll agree to your demands, that it's not likely to happen right away, or if at all?
Well, even if Beijing agrees, okay, we accept whatever you demand, we will cooperate with you, we will respect this, we will respect that, I think that the US and the rest of the world will fold already when China joined the WTO into 2001. Back then, there were quite a lot of sweet talks about, you know, China is now a fully market-driven economy. Even it's not, it will be, because Beijing promised this, Beijing promised that, fair play, level playing field, all the grandstanding talks, but nothing happened. So I don't think that the Trump administration will be fooled again. Trump is different from his predecessors, and to some extent, to many of his voters, he's the president who really delivers. So, and he has made crystal clear his demands. IP is an issue. Market access is an issue. The depreciation, the currency manipulation is an issue. So these are general issues that China must make real progress. Otherwise, the U.S. won't be forward again, because U.S. has already learned its lesson, right?
As far as the Communist Party and President Xi, how much of this is about saving face and not appearing that you're giving in to the United States?
Well, I think contrary to the international perception of Xi, the dictator, or the president for life, or the Winnie the Pooh-like president, he's got the mandate of heaven to rule. He, to some extent, ironically, that he still enjoys quite strong support back in China. Of course, he, you know, being an authoritarian regime, one benefit is that the top leader will never have to explain to his people or never have to talk to his people at all. No, no way. Even Trump talked to his people after meeting Kim Jong-un, but Kim Jong-un never did that. They sent to Xi. So I guess after the talk in Argentina, after G20 summit, after a meeting Xi, I think Trump will hold a press conference for sure to explain to the reporters and his people. But Xi will never do that. 100% for sure. So, which means that he doesn't have to save his face, because he is kind of people that the supreme leader, that he is capable of anything, you know, given the propaganda. He will never hold a press conference. So the matter about saving face is that it's more subtle, which means that he should make sure, he has to make sure. I think the most important thing for him should be that he must not leave its people the impression that China is kneeling down. Because I think that why he is such a strong man nowadays, why he enjoys people, some of the rather patriotic Chinese, they support him, is because he has shown his own resolve. He has become so assertive in democracy, in overseas military expansion, you know, make reclaiming islands in the South China Sea is one perfect example. Also Belt and Road Initiative. Some people believe that Xi is such a strong figure, so he must not show his weakness, otherwise he will lose his, not necessarily voter base, because no one in China can actually vote, but he does have to use these people's sentiment to his own advantage. So he must still convince his people indirectly through more propaganda that he is defending China's interest, that it is Trump himself that has been caught in favor rather the other way around.
A lot of people in the U.S., you and I have discussed, think of China as our equal, you know, economically, militarily, and that, you know, they have become a superpower with the U.S., but you've indicated that you don't necessarily agree with that.
No, I don't agree with that. Well, I think in the U.S. there has been quite a lot of a tendency to overestimate China's capabilities, both in economy, in military, or on other fronts. I think that even when it comes to the size of the economies, the U.S. GDP is still way larger than China's. A few years ago, Joe Biden even said publicly that the U.S. GDP was larger than China, Japan, and Germany combined. And China is number two, Japan number three, Germany number four. So I think it's still the same. And so China still has a lot of catching up to do, even when it comes to the economic output, let alone the per capita GDP or other per capita income. In terms of military, I have been writing quite a number of military stories. I think that China has, compared to its history, that China has advanced quite a lot. The People's Liberation Army, the Chinese military, has been expanding quite significantly, but it's never in the same league with the U.S. Army. China has been building its own aircraft carrier. China has already has one, but it's a second-hand aircraft carrier bought from Ukraine, built in the Soviet era. And China spent almost a decade, retrofitting it into a an aircraft carrier for training, just for training. And it has been building its second aircraft carrier, but it's a copycat of the Soviet one. And these aircraft carriers, they are not genuine flat tops. They have an upward bow to assist the takeoff or landing, which means that the fighter jets have to be light enough, which means these fighter jets cannot carry too many weapon or advanced radar system. So, and these war vessels, they are traditionally powered. But most of the U.S. carriers, they are nuclear powered, and they are in general strike groups, right? So I think that aircraft carrier is just one example. And in other fronts, the sheer head count, the PLA wins, but in terms of the command and control, in terms of the strategy, in terms of the weapon systems, China is way, way behind the U.S. I think the only aspect that China is ahead of the U.S. is infrastructure. Mm. China has massive airports, massive subway systems, a lot of skyscrapers, spawning national high-speed rail lines network. In this regard, that China is really charging forward, has really surpassed the U.S. for a long time. Even 10 years ago, China's infrastructure should have already been way better than the U.S.